Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the next episode of the Wabam Entertainment Podcast. I'm your host and resident Arrowverse expert, Landon Bell, and tonight I'm joined by that punisher of puns. Let's hear it for the ever-amazing Katie Gilstrap.
Hi, everyone!
And our special guest from Revenge of the Fans. He's that punisher of pints. Give it up for the stupendous Matt Vernier.
Hey now, and that is the greatest introduction I've ever had, so thank you.
Well, I work really hard on my introductions. And speaking of, we are going to talk about all things Arrowverse tonight, and we're going to kick it off with a discussion about Black Lightning.
Yeah, so if I may take the reins here, Black Lightning, you know, it's not really part of the Arrowverse. It's sort of a separate thing, but so was Supergirl until it wasn't. So who knows if it will be in the future. But I always maintained that the Arrowverse shows would benefit from having shorter seasons, 13, 14, 15 episodes. And Black Lightning proves my point because they had a 12, 13 episode season last season. I think it's like 16 this season, and it's a fantastic show. There's no monster or meta of the week. There's no filler. It's one chapter after the next that tells one story. In fact, the subtitles are like the Book of Something chapter one, Book of Something chapter two, and then it goes on to, so it's sort of structured that way. And this season has been, I didn't know where they could go after the first season, but this season has just been incredible as far as how they are able to just make every episode compelling and different. And they're not treading water at all either, because they don't have to fill 24 hours of stuff. They only have to do 16 so they can tell the story they want to tell.
Yeah. And shows like that, they tend to have not necessarily better stories, but more streamlined ones, where there's fewer just filler episodes, and like Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. is a good example of that. Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. would be a better show if it was just 13 episode seasons.
Yeah, and not to say that 13 episode seasons don't have filler, because like there's some seasons of like the Marvel Netflix shows that would have been better at 8 episodes instead of 13. Like they had 13, they had to tread water for 3 or 4 of them, so that could have been cut down to 8. And so, you know, it's not like 13's the magic number. I think it just depends on how much story you have to tell. Like, I think Stranger Things does it well. Like, they don't have a set episode count. Netflix is like, tell your story, and if it's 6 episodes, great. If it's 7, great. Just tell the story. And, you know, on a network show, they can't really do that. They require a set number of episodes, and you have to hit that quota, no matter if you have the story to fill that or not. But Black Lightning seems to be doing a very good job of doing that. And not only is the cast great, but the costumes, with the exception of Batwoman, which I'm sure we'll talk about later, the Black Lightning cast probably has the best superhero costumes on the channel.
I would agree. The costumes there are absolutely phenomenal. The department there has done a great job.
Yeah, Black Lightning's costume, honestly, is... this is partly because of the lightning bolt too, but it reminds me a lot of what they're doing in the movies with Shazam. It's just got that sleek look to it that just really pops.
Yeah, and there's practical reasons for all that. It's not, I mean, he can sort of channel things through his suit, and the tech helps him like control stuff, and so there's like, it's practical. It's not just, you know, like his ego on his chest or something like that. You know,
it's not just a symbol. It's a part of his entire persona as a superhero, I guess is what you would say.
Right. And I like that the show in there also, they give everybody something to do. They all have something. It's not just, we have to show them. And there's sometimes that there will be a character that's not in the episode because they just, the story doesn't involve them. Like, they don't try and shoehorn everybody in. Whenever somebody has to do something or when they show up, it's meaningful, and it either helps the story or it helps their character journey of where they're going. And the mid-season finale just introduced one of my favorite actors working today. His name is RJ Seiler. He was the Blue Ranger in the Power Rangers movie last year. who was the best part of the movie. And I've wanted him to play Terry McGinnis in a Batman Beyond movie, but he's awesome, and he just got introduced. So I'm very excited to see what he's going to contribute the second half of the season.
He should totally still be in a Batman Beyond movie.
Yeah, like I would love Michael Keaton to come back as Bruce Wayne. This is off topic, but that's okay. And then let RJ Seiler be the one to be Terry McGinnis, who is the new Batman. I think he would kill it in that.
I can't wait for them to make that movie and there to be a cover of Seal's Kiss by a Rose midway through, sung by Pitbull.
Okay. And let's not get landed on that. Not get him on that. Okay.
I mean, I enjoy that you just made a topical reference, because I'm still sort of in shock that that happened in Aquaman. But I don't really know what else to say to that. Again, this is way off topic, but the 1989 Batman album by Prince is one of the best superhero like albums ever. And so it's kind of hard to, like, if you actually do a song for a superhero movie that's not a score, it's kind of hard to even compete with that.
Yeah, that's very accurate. And I think the Avengers tried the first Avengers movie, but none of those songs from the album were in the movie, so.
Yeah, I don't know if that really counts then.
Okay, back on topic, because now we're talking about Marvel and this is DC.
We'll save this for the Aquaman pod.
Listen, I could talk Marvel all day, so maybe I'll have to come back on that one too.
You heard the man, Michael. Michael's our podcast editor, for anybody who's not doesn't know who Michael is.
Okay, anyways, moving on.
Why are you whispering?
Because don't you know the audience likes to hear people whisper?
Oh.
Sheesh. Come back next week for the ASMR.
I just figured they could turn the sound down if we were too loud.
Nah. So do we have anything else to add on Black Lightning? Like, that we want to talk about right now?
No.
I usually have pretty good guesses about character journeys, and I was way off on several characters there, and it delighted me to no end that I couldn't figure it out. So the writing on that show is fantastic, and I can't wait to see what is next.
That is how you know the writers are doing their job well. And speaking of writers doing their job well, let's talk about The Flash. That was a really bad segue, but we're going to run with it.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. I'll take the lead on this one, I guess. I have really enjoyed having Nora on the show. We should probably put a spoiler warning in this podcast, but here you go. Spoiler alert. Nora is Barry and Iris's daughter from the future. She traveled back at the end of last season and helped Barry destroy the satellite. That's what it's called. Yay, I figured it out myself. And so she's been a part of this last season, and together they've grown, and Nora has actually changed the original timeline that she knows of because of how she came back. So all of her knowledge that she came back with from the Flash Museum that's in her time, it's changed in the slightest aspects. Villains come in at different times, and it's been a really neat feature to have. We have another iteration of Harrison Wells, Sherlock Wells? Did I say that right, Matt?
I think so. Tom Cavanaugh is a gem, and I'm glad that he stays with the show, and I hope he stays forever. And I like that they give him stuff to do. It must be very fun for him to play all the different roles. Because the show, I mean, I would assume he's one of the highest paid ones on the show. I mean, he's a big name to get for for a show like that. And, you know, I was sort of upset the first season thinking that he was only going to be a one season thing. And they've, you know, now they've stretched his role out 5 seasons, and I don't see it going away anytime soon, because they could just keep bringing people in, especially now that we know that there's more than 53 Earths that exist. But anytime that they can give him something substantial to do, because they do waste him a lot in the background and stuff, but anytime they can give him something substantial to do, it's a treat for the audiences, because he's one of the best actors on TV working today.
I would agree. He's been a star in any role that he's taken on the show. And I think that's why I like his Reverse Flash character a lot better, because I can't stand the other guy that they had, that the Eobard Thawne, the actual face. Tom Cavanaugh's much better in the role, and I think that's why they keep bringing him back for like Crisis last year, or now, as we found out at the end of the mid-season finale, he's in jail in Nora's timeline as the Reverse Flash.
I mean, I think they bring him back because he's already on the payroll and he's already on set, and so it's just easier for him to put on the suit than to go find if that other actor, I forget his name, if he is available, because he's probably doing other projects, you know, then they have to negotiate his rate and pay him and see how long he's available for. Da, da, da. It's just easier to be like, Tom, just take off the weird beard and put on the yellow suit and, you know, drop your voice 2 octaves and we're good to go. Like they make these shows as cheap as possible. They're not cheap. They're actually well-made show. I mean, you know, they're cheaper than a movie, but they make them on a budget. And, so they try and find any way they can to sort of, save money. And so if they can recycle actors, you know, that's great. I mean, look at Savitar was, you know, just Grant Gustin again. And so like you can, if you can recycle actors, you're saving money, because it's like, he's already on the payroll. Just use him in this scene instead of us having to hire somebody else.
Well, and that's true. And I get that. And that makes sense. But I still like Tom Cavanaugh better than I like the other guy. So I'm glad that it has worked out to where they were doing whatever and bringing Tom Cavanaugh back as Reverse Flash.
I just like the idea of this one character, and of course it's a time travel-y sort of show. I just like the idea of them having this one character who just keeps popping up in people's lives, even though, you know, he keeps dying or going away or what have you. There's multiple versions of him, and so I just think that that's kind of a cool aspect. It'd be kind of like Doc Brown from Back to the Future if it wasn't the same person in all the movies. It was multiple versions of him.
Not to interrupt, but the other Eobard Thawne actor's name is Matt Letcher. I just wanted to put his name out there because...
Much appreciated.
He deserves to have his name on there instead of just that other guy. So, Matt Letcher is his name.
Thank you, thank you. Yeah, actor names is not my strongest suit, unfortunately.
Neither is mine. I forget Grant Gustin's name all the time.
Wait, I thought that was... Grant Gustin? Are you sure his name's not Stephen Amell? I thought Stephen Amell played...
That's Arrow!
No. He totally played the Flash. In Elseworlds.
OMG, right. I'm gonna... I know what I'm talking about. The only Arrowverse show that you have... Part that you have watched, and that's the only reason you know who that is.
I mean... Like that you went for the low-hanging fruit in the joke world. Like, you know, that was, you didn't even reach. You just, that one was just right there and you grabbed it, and more fair play to you. You got it there before I did. So, good job on that. But, you know, that joke was inevitable.
Yeah.
And we'll come back to that joke. do we have anything else we want to add about the Flash?
I mean, I always assumed Nora was working for somebody or being manipulated, and I had a feeling it was maybe Thawne, but I wasn't sure exactly who. Bad part about time travel is you have to follow your own rules. Like, you know, Back to the Future has a different set of rules than Doctor Who, which has a different set of rules than Legends, which has a different set of rules than Flash, but as long as you play within your own rules, it's fine. The Flash seems to sort of be... They break their own rules when they see fit for story purposes. Like Flashpoint was such a big deal that he did that and had to go back. And now like Nora's essentially doing something on a bigger scale, and yet the whole universe is still there and it didn't change as much. And so like, it's not very consistent. But they're just sort of ignoring the fact that we made this rule before and now we're not following that. We're playing by a different rule in the time travel like book.
That's not entirely accurate, because aren't the events of this season supposed to lead into Crisis next year?
Supposedly, but it is so frustrating that they can't stick to a little rule.
Yeah, but you're right. I mean, she is changing things and it's going to lead to something big, but like Flashpoint, he changed one thing and he came back. He goes, I can't change anything again because it's like awful. And now they're changing something. They're changing a bunch of things like every episode. Something's different now. And it's like, well, if Flashpoint, you change one thing, albeit a big thing with his mother's death, you change one thing and like now you have this person. Like now Draco Malfoy works with you, and like now, you know, Cisco and Caitlin have powers and stuff, but now all of a sudden it's different. I don't know. It's just like Back to the Future established these rules that like, this is what happens if this happens, and they stuck to it through the whole time. And that's why it's such a well made story. I enjoy the Flash. I'm not crapping on what they're doing. It's entertaining. They just sort of have selective memory when it comes to their past of what they can do to benefit the story now.
Yeah, I see your point. My only point to it was that like I can understand like if you want to do a season where like something like his mother is huge, so you come back, massive things are going to change. If you have a season that's still like taking place during a certain time, leading up to a big event, like I can understand like why they may want to slow burn it out. But yeah, like if you're bending your rules, like I see what you mean. That can sometimes be frustrating.
Yeah, it's not a huge deal. It's just a little thing I noticed.
Yeah. I mean, time travel stories in general always have this problem. And you use Back to the Future as an example, and that's probably the best time travel story ever told. But yeah. You know, even Doctor Who plays with this issue a lot. Of course, it's existed longer, so
Doctor Who breaks their own rules all the time, but they call it in the show. Like they put on Front Street, like, yeah, no, this is a rule, we're breaking it right now for this to happen. And
yeah.
Like they do. Like canon isn't a thing in Doctor Who. Like it's sort of by showrunner, like it whoever the showrunner is, they can decide what canon they want to recognize and what they don't. But like anytime they break a rule that the fans have sort of like taken as canon, they do tend to say like, yeah, no, we're breaking that rule, but we're calling ourselves on it. Like a character will say, we're breaking this rule.
Yeah.
It's timey-wimey. That's the best.
Wibbly-wimey, timey-wimey.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Which is actually a really good segue to the Arrow. Not really.
No. You might want to like re-record those later and then just splice them in here, because
you're shooting blanks, dude.
I ran with the one for the Flash and I'm shooting for this one, so I'm just gonna stick with it.
Okay,
speaking of timey-wimey, let's talk about Arrow. That's not, I mean, yeah, that's I yeah, I got nothing.
Are you not entertained?
Oh my gosh.
So yeah, we have Arrow, and it has been a really interesting season with the prison time, or the prison storyline, and then, you know, the events leading into Elseworld.
So I really thought they were going to do the same thing they did with Barry, where they only kept him in prison for like one or two episodes, but they actually kept him in like the majority of the first part of the season. And he was out for two episodes, maybe. I think it was two.
It was, no, he got out at the end of 7, and then, so he was out all of 8, and then Elseworlds was episode 9. So he was only out one full episode at the very end of 7. Like he was, the very end of 7 is when he got out from when he had the big fight with Diaz. But
so he's been out for 2 episodes.
Well, yeah, I guess Elseworlds, if you count that. But then if you count that, then it's 3-4 episodes because he was out for the Flash and Supergirl portions too.
Oh, fine, oh, fine. I was going to try and win my way into this. Okay.
But no, there was a thing early on that somebody, you know, had a rumor that, he's only going to be in prison for like 3 episodes. And Amel actually addressed it on Twitter. He said, well, that's false. It's going to be longer. And so people were trying to guess what it was. And, you know, we knew he was going to be out by episode 9 for the crossover. They would be kind of stupid unless the whole crossover took place in his jail cell. But so it was like, well, 8 episodes would be the most that he'd be in there then. Unless he goes back afterwards. But obviously that's not going to happen now. But the whole prison thing was great. They went for broke with it, and it paid off. There were some great episodes in there.
You have me wanting to see a version, the first episode of Elseworlds, where they switch places, and so they actually have to prison break Barry out. Can you imagine how cool that would have been?
Well, we've seen the Flash break out of prison before in the Flash. Yeah. And, you know, Elseworlds had so much to do that I don't think, even if that might have been maybe on, you know, something they considered, because I would assume they would consider everything. But they had so much to do that, you know, to spend that much time doing it would be, would, you know, take away from other things. And then, you know, that would cause issues within the world of Arrow when it goes back to, you know, when the crossover is over, of, oh, now he just escaped from prison. And so now he can't be, you know, legit released or whatever.
Yeah.
That's true. But hypotheticals, you know, interesting to consider what could have been if they had taken
back in season 2 or 3 or something. He said, I don't think he thought he was going to go this long, but Amel was like, yeah, well, if we get to 6 seasons, I'll grow the iconic,
the goatee.
Mm-hmm. And then, 6 seasons happened and he didn't. And then, he's like, well, 1 season late. So he grew it for this. I just wanted to see him with the mask and the hood on with the goatee. But you know, can't have everything we want. So
he does look very weird with no hood on and no mask. And I'm like, dude, just put on the hat already. Just put on the pointy hat.
Well, I mean, I could be wrong. I didn't read a ton of Green Arrow comics, but I don't think he ever had a hood. It was, yeah, he always had the mask, but it was, I don't think he had a hood. I think the show's sort of unique take was the hood. He had like the Robin Hood hat sometimes, but
that's the hat I'm talking about.
Yeah. And then sometimes he didn't have anything, but he still had the mask on. Like he didn't have anything on his head, but he still had the mask on. You know, I think, I don't know how long this, you know, working with the Star City PD thing is going to last. We might see him back with the hood on sooner rather than later. I mean, it's part of the identity of this version of that character is the hood. I mean, that's literally what he used to be called before, you know, the evolution took place. So it's sort of, it's part of the character's identity. I don't know how wise it is to abandon that completely forever.
Yeah. And especially with Barry having the mask and the hood on as Oliver Queen in Elseworld, it was relatively weird to see him with it after Oliver walked around without it. And so it will be interesting to see. I think they are going to go back to having him in the mask and the hood at some point.
That's not why it was weird. It was just weird to see them in the costumes, period.
I'm talking about for continuity purposes.
It was that was, I mean, I still can't. It's still weird for me. I mean, it was great to hear Grant, you know, scream, "You have failed the city," with a bow and arrow in his hand. Like fantastic, but
so good.
But you know, it's still, when that image came out, the first image that came out was Stephen Amell tweeted a picture of him in the Flash costume and just said, "My name is Barry Allen. I'm the fastest man alive." And like, I had to go sit in a corner by myself for like 15 minutes just to like process this. Like it was weird. I mean, it was awesome. I'm glad they did it. It was fun. but it took a lot of getting used to. Like, I'm just getting used to him not having a hood on, and now like I'm seeing Grant Gustin in the costume. Like, it's kind of it was a lot to process.
I don't know. I'm still I'm still partly wishing gone with I think it was Boss Logic did like a version where Supergirl and switch.
Yeah, that was funny.
A bunch of those.
Although, you know, it would have been fun to do Superman and Supergirl, where Supergirl wouldn't have changed all that much, but then Superman has the skirt on in the thing, which would have been
really,
which would have been funny. But
oh gosh, and Lois Lane has no idea,
right? Yeah, like I think it had done that on Earth 38 instead of one. It could have lended itself, but no, the way they did it was, I mean, I don't think there was any other option. The way they did it was great. I just, you know, I wonder if they considered ever going farther, like, you know, would Felicity and Cisco switch, or like, you know, would like Diggle and Wells switch, or, you know, I wonder if they considered doing like the supporting characters too, or if it was always just going to be them too. Cause I think it takes away a little bit. Cause like the highlight was seeing them two play off of each other switch. So I think it would have taken away a little bit if they had done it to more people.
Yeah. It'll be interesting to see where Barry and where Oliver go in the latter halves of their seasons, and see how much the crossover and the switching really did affect their personalities.
Well, they certainly understand each other better, and I think through that they understand themselves better. Like, because if you see yourself in somebody else, like, you sort of get a better view of who you are than when, you know, than when you're just used to yourself. And so I think they'll approach things in different ways, and I don't know if it's going to be they'll double down, or will they sort of tether back and sort of be like, you know, I'm not going to go full what I was, because I know what that can lead to and stuff, because I've seen myself do it.
What I liked a lot was, and some people were really, you know, up in arms about it. They were like, oh, the Flash writers hate Oliver Queen. They just hate him because they don't understand his character. Yeah,
no, well, that's not even close to being true, but it's, I do like that the second hour of Elseworlds was essentially the Comedy Central roast of Oliver Queen, because I mean the jokes were great between you know, Grant and the whole notion of him getting jealous that Batman might have existed before him because he was the original villain. Like, all of it was just even Kara like doing that impression, like, you have failed this city. Or, you know, on the porch was funny. Like, he just got mercilessly roasted through the whole thing, and I think Stephen Amell loved every minute of it.
Totally. But what I was going to say is, I think you were talking about how the characters understand each other better. And I really liked that scene in the first episode where they're talking about, Barry Grant Gustin as Oliver Queen. He's, you know, he's laughing and chuckling and going on, and Stephen Amell just gets ticked off. Mm-hmm. He's just like, I am who I am because of my pain, and you're just laughing and cutting it up. And
yeah, and
it was a real character beat between those two characters.
You know, we've seen Grant be like sort of depressed and sad and stuff as Barry before. So when he was acting sort of angry, it wasn't as off-putting as when Stephen Amell was acting all happy and cheery and stuff. When he was laughing
at the end of episode 3.
Well, that, not only that, but when he was like laughing at Grant in the jail cell when he had to dislocate his thumb and stuff, and that's how he's able to phase, because he was like making fun of him. Like, I was like almost uncomfortable, because I was like, you know, Amell's supposed to be like, I mean, you know, let's face it, he's the Batman of this universe. He's brooding. He's, you know, serious all the time. He doesn't really put up with the super crap. Like, it's just, and for him to like sort of have this like moment of levity was was great, but it was kind of off-putting, more so than the anger in Grant when he's like, Amazo, you have failed the city, before he lets go of the arrow.
Of course, that line, it's funny because it's a serious beat, but it's hilarious to
right.
hear him say that.
And, well, I mean, and they use it because, like, Stephen Amell used it in the Flash costume when he had to when he had to go, you know, to the factory where Amazo was at first, and Cisco's like, yeah, that's not your line, bro.
I think it was actually Michael. Man, Michael keeps getting a lot of mentions on this cast. I think it was him who said something about, man, Stephen Amell is throwing lightning bolts his very first time as the Flash. He's already the best.
Yeah, there's definitely a learning curve there, right? Like, when Grant was Oliver, he knew how to fight, but there was still sort of a learning curve of how to use his fighting skills. And I think, you know, it was kind of confusing of what they got from one and what they still had of themselves, because, like, Oliver Queen had all that training and stuff. So, of course, if he became the Flash, he would be able to, like, know the discipline and stuff it takes to train and how to start and stuff. But whereas ran really fast until he fell down, and then just ran really fast again until he could do more stuff. And, you know, that's the thing with the Flash, is he solves all of his problems by running really, really fast. And so it's kind of cool to see them sort of figure out each other's methods. Like, okay, I can't fight my way out of this, but I can run really, really fast. So how could I approach this?
Totally.
But I think, I don't know. Elseworlds was, I can't believe they pulled it off. Like, after Crisis on Earth X last year, I was like, you know, it's going to have to be a smaller scale crossover next year, because they're not going to be able to beat this. And in a sense, it was, because they didn't involve the Legends of Tomorrow. But this was bigger than last year in scope. And you know, next year looks to be even bigger. So it's amazing that they pull this off year after year, especially you hear everyone from the cast and crew complain about, I mean, they jokingly, lovingly complain, but they complain about how much of a logistic nightmare this is, and how hard it is on everybody's schedules, and just how much of a nightmare it is in every facet of making it. Yet they pull it off every year, and they go bigger every year. They do it for us, and that's never lost on me, that they only do it for the fans, and it's, well, the ratings, but that is the fans in a sense. And it's, I just, you know, I don't know if anybody who's associated with the show will ever hear this, but it's very much appreciated that they put that much work into it every year.
It definitely was a bigger crossover in the sense, I can't remember who said it, but it might have been Steven, but they talked about how this crossover was going to have emotional ramifications, and it was going to hit the characters on a really deep level. And I really do think that it did that. I also think, with the logistical nightmare, I really think that Crisis is going, the crossover is going to be at the beginning of next season instead of in the middle. Because then you could have Oliver die and not have to worry about having Arrow, for instance.
Well, that's that would mean Arrow gets, this is Arrow's last season then. And you know, I don't know if they would do that, because, well, Crisis on Infinite, there's never been a Crisis on without a Flash dying. So they won't kill Barry, but they might kill Wally, and so it, you know, they could go that route, and it's like you still have a Crisis of Infinite Earth with a Flash dying. But I think the way around the logistical thing is, you don't make it like, you, let's assume the Legends are involved, so you don't make it, you know, four parts, each one an episode. You just, instead of ordering 23 episodes for every season, do 21 or 22, and then that extra one, just make a crisis, like make a three-part Crisis on Infinite Earths. It's not that Crisis on Infinite Earths part one is Arrow, and then part two is Flash, and part three is Supergirl. It's just, there's just three or four episodes of Crisis on Infinite Earths that's sort of separate from the regular episode count, and it would be a little different, because they don't have to, you know, because essentially the three leads now filmed are going to have 25 episodes, because they filmed every episode of their own, and then they were each on an episode of, you know, like Grant was on an episode of Arrow now and an episode of Supergirl, so he filmed two extra episodes. Instead, if you lower the episode count down, not only do you get tighter stories, but then you have sort of room to breathe to do the crossover if you don't count those in the episode count.
I would agree with you there, but so how do you think Oliver's bargain is going to affect the crisis? Because he clearly bargained something,
right,
to save Supergirl and Flash.
Yeah, and I think we're meant to assume it was his life. But remember, we're also seeing the future of Star City and of Arrow and of everything. And we've seen future Oliver Queen in Legends, but that is not the same future that we are seeing. Like the showrunner, Beth Schwartz, said that's not the same future that we are seeing in Arrow. Like it's sort of, you know, the Legends changed something where that one with him with the beard and Connor Hawk and all that stuff doesn't really exist anymore. So we don't know the whereabouts or the fate of Oliver in the future yet, but there is a future there. And, you know, you would think his death would have come up because Felicity's did, you know, in the future, you know, especially with his son walking around like it, especially if Oliver had the presence of mind to hide something on Lian Yu with the bow and the mark of four or whatever it is that Roy found. Like there's more to Oliver Queen's story yet. And so I don't know, maybe if it's, to me, we're supposed to think his death, but how, I don't think the monitor would think his death is worth both Barry and Kara's, like it, Kara's, like if it's like, okay, I'll give you yours for the Flashes, but then you need to sacrifice something else for me to save both of them. So like, I think it might be a little more nuanced than just my life for theirs, because I don't think the monitor would do a 2-for-1 deal.
Yeah, that makes sense.
I'm racking my brain trying to figure out like any kind of other possibilities here, but I'm kind of,
I don't think we have enough information to know that yet. Like I think, you know, I assume the monitor will be back in Crisis next year. And we can get more, maybe he, you know, something like Amel leaves Star City and starts the Justice League somewhere to protect, you know, more than one world, or I don't know. It's, I think if the monitor was going to do a life for a life, then you can't, then he wouldn't be able to save both of them because he only has one life. Like he would need to offer more or something else for both of them to be spared.
What if he sacrificed himself and Batman?
I'm sure. Think about it. Okay, while we're on the subject, the flash forwards this season have been really cool and really interesting to see a different take on the flashbacks from the first 5 seasons of Arrow.
Yeah, when I heard Colton Haynes was coming back, I was trying to figure out how, because, you know, he ran off with Thea, and it was like, I don't think he'd ever leave back unless Thea had, you know, died. But Mark Guggenheim, who sort of, you know, was the executive show, said the one character we will never kill in the Arrowverse is, so, and I took him at his word for that. So I was like, well, I don't think Thea died, which means I don't see how Roy's coming back at all. Unless it's like a Laurel situation where it's like Earth 2 Roy or something. And he kept teasing at comic.
And clearly he has to come back though, because he knows about the Mark of Four, and the Mark of Four hasn't been mentioned yet previously.
Mm-hmm. And I think when Roy made his appearance last year, you know, to see Thea off, I think at that time the Team Arrow was split, so I don't think he ever met Dinah then, but he knows Dinah now. So yeah, he is going to return. I don't know if we'll see that, you know, this season, or if it'll just be like implied or whatever, but it's really, and then when I saw him in the Flash forward, I go, oh, we're going to get both. Like we'll see him in present and in Flash, but we've just been seeing him in Flash forwards, and it's actually been pretty cool that they're doing that. You know, the last time I saw Flash forwards was in Lost, and I know how that ended. And I, you know, but hopefully this is a little bit different. But yeah, the flash forwards have been an intriguing element, and I like that they don't do them every episode because they feel like they have to. They only do them when they want to tell us parts of stories. And then if they have other story to tell, they said, okay, we'll just wait until next time to say something then.
Yep.
So this has been a good discussion on Arrow. And we've already talked a lot about Elseworlds, but there's still a few aspects of Elseworlds not covered. Primarily Batgirl and Lois
Lane. Batwoman.
Oh, excuse me. Batwoman. Ah, I will always say Batgirl, and I'm going to get that out of my brain.
Yeah. I mean, it's two different characters. So, like, it's, you know, it's not just, yeah. It's not just because it's like, that's what she wants to be called kind of thing. It's literally a different person. So,
yeah.
And it doesn't help that they both have red hair.
Okay. One is red, and then the other is true natural red.
I know. It just like, it, in terms of me sorting it out green, it's, I'll get used to it.
Sure.
I will get used to it.
I'll believe it when I see it.
There you go.
Yeah. And, you know, the little bit we saw of Batwoman was not even close to being enough. And I can't imagine her not getting a series if she's allowed to. And so I hope we get some official news on that sooner rather than later, because I am all in for that show.
Oh yeah. Her costume's absolute perfection, probably mm-hmm. the best on the CW.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, like we said before, like the Black Lightning ones are pretty, I think has all of them beat in any show. I mean, it's straight out of the comic book. It is perfect.
Totally. And, you were talking about the show going to series. They got Ruby Rose, mm-hmm. who's coming from the film world.
Well,
and also like premium sort of HBO sort of stuff. And, you know, for them to get her means that they're pretty serious about the character.
Right. And, but you know, the world of film and television are blurred now. It's, you know, people do both all the time, but you could also make the argument, well, if we're only going to do a one-off, let's get a big actor for it because we only have to pay them once. Sort of like John Hurt as the War Doctor in the 50th anniversary special. Like we can't pay John Hurt to do 13 episodes, but we can pay him to do 90 minutes. In fact,
and it brings a different fan base in.
A little bit of an aside, I think. True. I think when, because John Hurt had his first scene in the season 7 finale when he turns around or whatever. And I think Stephen Moffat wrote, you know, the biggest movie star in the world turns around, because they hadn't cast who it was going to be yet. So he just wrote the biggest movie star in the world turns around, and then they got John Hurt. But I said that's one side of it. But I think, Landon, you're correct. I think Ruby Rose signed up to do more than one episode. Like, I'll do this, but with intentions of a future of playing this. I don't think it was something that she wanted to do a one and done thing, or just like a yearly thing like Tyler Hoechlin is with Superman, like sort of just pop in on special occasions and leave. I think she was banking on sort of having this as a long-term thing.
Yeah. And there's a lot of places you could go with it, because this character's never been done in before and barely in animation. So there's an entire plethora of stories that you can tell that you've never told in a visual medium, other than, you know, outside the comics.
Right. The Flash has been, the Flash, Green Arrow, they've all had Supergirl, they've all had bigger, longer histories than this character, and they get to pick and choose the stories that they want to sort of adapt for TV. With this, you might be able to just invent something brand new that, I mean, they'll adapt some of the stuff, I think, but it's kind of hard to do without Batman being around. But I think they can just make up stuff completely, and you're not going to go against, you know, 80 years of canon because of like the essence of the character or something like that, because you don't have that long of a history. So that might actually be something tempting for some writers to want to tackle. Like, you know, with the Flash, we have to look at 100 years worth of comics and try and find out what, not 100 years, but you know, time travel joke. But you know, they have to look at countless issues of, okay, is this, or if so, how is it done? How can we adapt it for this? Da, da, da. That would be a little bit easier and a little bit more, and they'd have a little bit more freedom with Batwoman. So yeah, I think that might be appealing to some folks who wouldn't ordinarily want to get into comic book TV adaptations because of something constricting, because you have to constantly adapt stuff instead of just create your own something.
Yeah, and shows that have tried it, like Gotham has tried to do that, where we're going to tell our own story but fit it into this world, and they've done it in such a hack job kind of way that it's offended a lot of people.
See, I watched Gotham's, I think I watched like half, I think a season and a half maybe, and then I bailed on it. But like, I think, you know, obviously I'm not in the business, so people don't agree with me, because I mean, there's people who were more successful writers. They're like, yeah, okay, we'll listen to some random internet dude. But it's, I think, you know, I think Gotham would have been better if they had just made it like an Elseworlds story where Commissioner Gordon, or not Commissioner, Jim Gordon becomes Batman in that universe. Like, it's, you know, obviously, I don't think there's a comic book version where Jim Gordon is ever Batman, because there have been a few people who've taken the cowl. But I think in this version of the story, like, well, Bruce Wayne's a kid, like that still happens. Jim Gordon becomes Batman, and Bruce Wayne sort of says, yeah, I should do that when I grow up to whatever. Like, I think they could have adapted it that way, where so you get Batman, but it's still, it's sort of a different story. But
it's a very interesting take.
Yeah, but also I understand why not, because it's like, well, if we can do Batman on TV, then why are we wasting time with the Jim Gordon prequel? Let's just do Batman on TV then, you know, which is what everybody wants, but they can't do it. So,
yeah, I mean, it was a good idea, but then everybody's like, well, we want Batman. And so they've done this kind of weird hack job version.
Right. Well, that was my point at the end. Like, if they got permission to do Jim Gordon as Batman, it's like, well, if we can show a dude in a Batman suit running around, can we just change his name to Bruce Wayne and make the show we want to make in the first place? You know, they're doing all this Titans with Robin and Jim Gordon on Gotham and Batwoman because they can't use the character that they want to use. So they have to just run circles around it. I mean, and they do great. I mean, most of it's very entertaining. But they, and you know, sometimes when you're limited like that, your creativity comes out more than it would if you weren't as limited. I don't know if we'll ever see like a legit Batman live action TV show.
You know, this we could probably do an entire podcast about this subject, but imagine if they'd had this mentality back when the Adam West series was airing. Like, that was so bonkers, but it is so good to go back and watch that show. I can imagine if in the right hands, somebody could do an amazing Batman show, even if it was...
I'm going to tell you boys to focus.
In light of the Adam West series, like, you know, the stuff they did there was bonkers and subversive. Yeah. And if somebody today wanted to try something new and different, you know, it may seem weird at first because it's not, you know, Nolan-esque, or it's not Frank Miller-esque or whatever. You know, that doesn't necessarily mean to be bad, and I'm certain that someone could tell a really good live-action Batman.
Okay, back to focusing.
All right. Lois Lane. We have to talk about Lois
Lane. No, we don't have to talk about Lois Lane.
We gotta talk about my girl Lois.
It's amazing to me how much Elizabeth Tulloch, I'm sorry if I'm butchering your last name. Too low, is that how you say it?
I think
it's amazing to me how much she looks like Margot Kidder. Like, it is uncanny how much she looks like, you know, not the original Lois Lane, but the one of the most famous ones from the Chris Reeve Superman movie. You know, she was on screen very, very, very briefly, and I thought she captured the essence of the character 100%. You know, she would have absolutely went and you know, when she said to Superman, well, if you don't go to their world, she would just jump in vortex portal she's never seen and go to a completely different earth because she's Lois Lane. Why? Of course, that's what she does. Like, she captured that character so well. that if we don't, like, I'm not holding my breath for a Tyler Hoechlin Superman series. Like, I would love it. I just don't think it'll happen. But I hope that she gets to pop in on Supergirl every now and then, because it would be a shame, like Batwoman, if we only ever got to see her that little bit.
Yeah, she totally reminds me. I've never seen the Christopher Reeve Superman movies.
Wow.
I know.
She's not the only person here who hasn't seen.
God. I'm just saying.
But I think
I'm going to mute my mic. I got to say some words. Hold on.
Bleep. Bleep. Bleep.
All right, I'm back now.
She reminds me a lot of Erica Durant. Hey, I have DC Universe now, so I can watch those. I just need to make time for it.
No. Yeah, not those. Just the first one. Like the sequels. Yeah, that's okay. Like when she's flying like Richard Pryor around, like it's. I understand, but the first one is just it's part of the fabric of American pop culture, like the Wizard of Oz is. Like, there's no, even if you watch it once and say I'm good, like it's, you just have to watch it just to have seen it.
Okay, put it on my list.
Will do.
Oh,
my list is huge, but I'll get to it eventually.
Elizabeth reminds me a lot of Erica, and I absolutely loved Erica. She was Lois Lane in Smallville, and she was like my favorite. Like, she completely captured the essence of Lois Lane to me. She and Tom Welling had great chemistry, and that's what I get from Elizabeth. And Matt, you just said his name and I can't remember.
Tyler Hoechlin?
Yes. She and Tyler have a lot of chemistry together.
So,
and yeah.
My Lois Lane was Terry Hatcher in the 90s from Lois and Clark, The New Adventures of Superman. And like, I mean, they're all playing the same character. So they all tackle the essence of the character. And so, you know, they all have elements in common, and they all have similar, similar things, you know. But yeah, Terry Hatcher is sort of the one that I compare the other Loises to, just because she was the one that I sort of was, you know, that was my Lois Lane growing up. Elizabeth, she was right up there with the best of them. I mean, she had maybe what, 12 minutes of screen time tops.
Yeah.
And like from all three episodes, maybe 12 minutes. And that's probably being generous. And she did more in 12 minutes, you know, than a lot of people have with that character. It was really a treat to see what she did there.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know, like you were saying, I'm not necessarily holding breath for a Lois and Clark series, but I would be really, really hyped and excited if they made a Lois and Clark series. Just because I've been trying to get some,
yeah, that would be a
solo story.
That'd be another Arrowverse show that you could pretend not to have seen.
Oh no!
Or no, pretend to have seen. Not sorry. Yeah.
First of all, I am an Arrowverse. And second of all, I am a Lois Lane shill, and yes. I've been preaching for years that we need a Lois Lane solo. I'd totally be happy with Lois Lane series. Like, we almost got one with this Metropolis show that they announced and then it fizzled out. Like, who knows what's happening with that? But yeah, I like this version of Lois. The line where she's like, Deck and Barry?
a so Barry awesome. That she's met like 10 minutes ago. Like, it was, yeah.
Yeah, and, no, it's so great.
You know, and I just love... I love her confidence with Superman too. Like, be careful, ladder's old. Yeah, well, you'll be here to catch me. So, you know, who cares? Like, it's all. She was spot on. Like, there was nothing that was like, that's not like hashtag not my Lois. Like, that there was nothing there to complain about. She was awesome.
Well, my pitch has always been: we need a version of this character where we get to see what it's like to be the superhero's hero. Because, you know, all these other superhero shows and, you know, Doctor Strange or Batman or whoever we're talking about, and they're doing their thing and all the other supporting cast is circling around them. But what if we focused on a character who's normally in the supporting cast? Like, what is their role in a
world? Okay, Landon, just link your article.
Okay.
The problem with that, though, is, you know, Lois and Superman are so intertwined, and it's like, well, any, you know, anything you see Lois in, everyone's just going to be asking, well, why isn't she investigating this with Clark? Oh, she's in danger. Why isn't Superman here to rescue her? Like, they would have to find a way to write Superman completely out of it, or, you know, make an Elseworld thing where, like, he's, you know, the Red Sun version where there's a super guy in Russia that I know, but like, or that I've heard of, but like, I'm just a regular reporter. Like, they'd have to do something, because with the dynamic that it's at, it's like, there's, you know, it's sort of hard to get something with where you can make her the hero when without sort of having Superman overshadow her.
I think you can totally do it. And honestly, if they did a show, I know there was one called that, but just call it Lois and Clark again. And you could do those stories. You could also do just, you know, straight run Superman.
Well, you know, Lois and Clark, the Lois and Clark show was great because it was a lot of, because it was more about Clark Kent than Superman, like that alter ego. Like, a lot of the show was just them investigating stories, and you know, it was almost like a, you know, like they were solving mysteries and like that kind of thing. It was almost like that. And then, you know, the last 5 minutes, they'd be like, okay, well, let's make Lois get trapped under a barrier so then Dean King can put on his tights and save her. Like, but it wasn't a Superman show. It was a Lois and Clark show, but you still had the Clark Kent element to it. And so you'd have to find a way to sort of get rid of that if you wanted Lois to be the focus. Cause if not, it's going to be, well, why would Clark be sitting at home just, you know, eating Cheetos while his wife's in danger or something?
A Lois and Clark show, say it fixes the two issues that everybody seems to have with Superman these days. And it's one, you're primarily focusing on Clark Kent, who is more interesting than Superman. And two, you're primarily focusing on Lois Lane, who's also more interesting than Superman. Superman is like a persona. So if you're focusing on the characters behind that persona, you have a much better story.
But even then, that's still a tandem show with a Clark Kent character. If you just wanted a solo Lois thing, you still run into the same problem.
Okay, I'm going to try and steer y'all back on track. Supergirl.
It's not possible. I'm kidding. Yes, Supergirl.
Well, let me talk about some Supergirl aspects of Elseworlds, and that is that the last two crossovers, you know, James Olsen has not had a big role at all. He, in Crisis on Earth X, he dies at the very beginning from Evil Arrow, so it's like he's in for 5 minutes, and then this one, he's Cisco's bodyguard, and I want to see one where like the Guardian suits up with the rest of them and like is part of the like actual fight. Cause it's always just Kara and, you know, her sister. And that's great. Cause that pair is fun to watch, but like, I want sort of James Olsen to be sort of more involved with that kind of stuff. So hopefully in Infinite Earths, he has more to do.
See, and I would disagree with you. I don't like James Olsen in Supergirl, and I don't think he should have become Guardian. Like, it was a huge major distraction for me last season, and it definitely, like, I've enjoyed not having him be Guardian this season a lot more than when he was Guardian, and technically he's still Guardian, but he doesn't suit up as often, but that's about to change. But.
And that's fine. Even if he's not Guardian, give James Olsen a bigger role, then have him, you know, have him run point with like Cisco on getting information out there, or
yeah,
do something like, give him something else to do, not just put him in there because we might as well use him. He's available. And so, well, we need a bodyguard for Sisko. Let's just put him in there. Like, give him something substantial to do, even if it's not Guardian. Let's you know, have him, I don't know.
Well, and maybe in Crisis, you see him and Lois partner back up, and you see them team up on the report on what's happening around them. Like,
yep,
something of the sort.
That could work. It just something, because Mikad Brooks is fun to watch on screen, and so hopefully, I just wish he had bigger roles in the when everybody's together. Because I think the just the interactions between, you know, he's met the Flash before, but I think interactions between like him and some members of Team Flash and Team Arrow would be fun.
That is true.
I mean, it's a radical idea, but what if they just went back to like his primary thing being that he's Superman's friend? Like, that's an angle they've not really done yet. So,
well, because it's Supergirl. Like, they're not going to write him out of the show. Like, they're not going to, you know, he can't be Superman's friend in a Supergirl show. He's got to have a reason to be in a Supergirl show. If he was Superman's friend, he could maybe guest star once a season when he's on vacation in National City or something. But, like, for him to have a substantial thing in Supergirl, he needs to be more, and he is more. And I like, you know, that he's running Catco and stuff, but my complaint was just the crossover itself. I wish he had more to do.
Yeah.
I don't know. I think you could do it in a world of smartphones. Like, I mean, what if, you know, I don't know. What if Clark reached out to him when he needed scoops of the Daily Planet, or I don't know. There's 100 different scenarios you could try that would.
But I mean, his friendship with Clark is part of his character. Like, he references it all the time. It's why Kara trusts him. It's why they were friends in the first place, because he's one of the few people who knew, you know, the secret of
who Superman was.
Right.
Yeah.
And so, I mean, it's part of the essence of character, but they've taken it beyond that and evolved him into, you know, something else. As far as the Supergirl show itself, they have seemed to all but abandon the Red Sun, well, I guess Red Daughter, Russia, like doppelganger Supergirl thing. Like, they did last season and then a couple times this season, and now it's just, yeah, I guess we'll get to it eventually because we showed it to you, but like it hasn't become important or relevant or anything yet. And it was sort of, you would think in the mid-season finale you would have gotten something of, here's the reason we're showing this to you, like, you know, but they haven't given us anything but just little flashes of, and they, all of those flashes that we've seen mean nothing right now.
Yeah. It's gotten so bogged down in the culture of today's world. And to an extent that makes sense to me, but at the same time, like you said, you tease this really big showing of the Red Sun, and you haven't shown anything like of substance in regards to that. And it's really started to irk me in a sense, but I still enjoy watching it. It's a good show.
I mean comic books have always done that. What's going on in the world today, and you know, Black Lightning does it, Supergirl does it, the shows do it just like the comic books did back in the 60s. And so you know, I don't have the issue with that, but mine is just whatever their plans for the Russian Supergirl thing is, maybe should have been laid out a little better, because it wasn't like, you know, we're getting the future teases on Arrow, but they're sort of building off of each other, and they're leading to something. And while we might not know what it's leading to, we know it's heading somewhere. The flashes of the Russian Supergirl, it's not like the first or the second scene we saw built off the first scene we saw. They were two completely unrelated things. Mm-hmm. And it was just a little thing. And it's like, okay, so there's this other Supergirl somewhere, but why? And like, I mean, I guess it's good we're asking the question, but like, I thought we would just sort of get a vague idea of, okay, I guess we know what's coming into play next, or this is intriguing, or it's a mystery we want to talk about. Instead, it's just why. Like, it's not a mystery of what she's doing. It's more of why are they even showing us this right now? Because it's just like they didn't, I don't know, plan it out good enough to at the first part of the season before if it's going to come into play in the second half.
I think a lot of shows fall into that trap. They'll set seeds for something, and then by the time they come back to it, it's just eons later.
Sure. I mean, Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. I'm all really for planting together. Seeds because you're like, oh my God, yeah, like I remember them saying that before. But if it was just like a one-time thing, fine. But they, I think we've probably seen three or four little teases, but they never built off of each other. They never gave us, like, we still don't know anything more than we knew the first tease we got. You know, like, it was never, like, every time we see a flash forward in Arrow, we get a little bit more information. The Supergirl thing, we don't. And so I'm still excited to see where that's going to go. I just, you know, it was sort of frustrating to be like, why are you showing us this when you obviously have this other story you want to tell first. So tell that story first and then just bring that in later.
Kind of makes you wonder if it's going to factor into Crisis at all. Like that's a legitimate something where you could touch on that.
I don't know. Like, I think the shows are going to, in a sense, like, show teasers and hints for Crisis, setting it up, because obviously they wouldn't have announced Crisis was coming as soon as they did if they weren't planning something around it. So I think you could see that, but I don't see how the Supergirl doppelganger would relate back into Crisis. I think it's going to be the big bad of the season. I just don't think they've planned well enough to have it like Matt said.
Yeah, and I completely see your point there. It's also, what I was going to say is, it's also something, even if it factored into Crisis, it's kind of that thing where you'd want to see it more on like the main show, because it just kind of makes more sense that way.
That's the thing with the crossovers, is there are, you know, Arrow fans that don't watch Flash and Supergirl, and there are Flash fans that don't watch Supergirl and Arrow, and there are Supergirl fans that don't watch Flash, and it's like, you can't do work for the other shows for people who might not ever see that. Like, you can't do have Flash progress in, say, Arrow, because the Flash fans who don't watch Arrow would miss that, and so they sort of have to take care of their own business in each of their own shows. And then sort of just quickly get everything together, because, okay, you'll watch part 1, 2, and 3 of this, and then just go back to just watching like the Flash or whichever one you watch, because not everybody watches all of them.
Yeah. That's something that is also interesting in light of that Legends of Tomorrow didn't factor in at all with this last crossover.
I didn't understand why until I saw it, and there was no room for them. I think they would have just been in there just for the sake of being in there. Like, I don't know if the story would have been stronger with them included. Other than if they, you know, brought Brandon Routh in as Superman, but you know, then it's not technically a Legends crossover, because he's not his Arrowverse character. He's playing, you know, an Elseworld character, but I like that Legends addressed it in a very funny way. And there was one Legends cameo in episode 3, although it wouldn't be the person I would have picked. But I think, Legend, you know, Gary. They had.
Sorry, I just wanted to say it.
And it was, yeah. And he. see, I just lost my train of thought now, because that was. My body's physically cringing. And it's. I don't know what I might need an adult. I don't.
Big shot. I don't know.
Oh, that's what I was gonna say. So this is the first time, the first crossover where all three leads spent the majority of the time together. Like, with the rest of them, they would interact a little bit, but they, you know, it would always just be this cool combination of all the different cast members of all the different shows. You'd have like, you know, like Diggle and Ray and Cisco together in one, and then Felicity and Sarah and, like, you know, Caitlin. And it was cool to like see combination of different shows. But this is the first time that really, like, you had Supergirl with the Green Arrow and the Flash all together for most of the time to highlight, like, let's highlight the three leads of our show. And I think with Legends being an ensemble show, you know, it would sort of muddy that up as well if you had them in there.
Yeah. And the Legends crossover with themselves, air quotes, it was funny. It was hysterical. And I really want to see some more shorts or something on the Puppets of Tomorrow.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, all of those were great. The Sirens of whatever it was. And yeah, the Killers of Chronology or whatever. Yeah. But that's the thing about Legends is they do this ridiculous stuff. And then, but yet, you know, Constantine's story is absolutely heartbreaking. And it's like, you're laughing / cringing at how ridiculous this is, but yet your emotions are being affected because of the strong character work they're doing. Like, they get away with it because of, like, they give these people powerful stories, and it's really a weird combination, but once you get used to it, actually it's quite remarkable what they've been able to pull off.
Yeah.
Cause it's not a hollow show. It's not a shallow show. It's a ridiculous show, but they do a lot of great character work, and they still do right by the characters that people have been invested in for years.
Yeah, I think they've suffered a little bit this season, specifically because they've split up the team more, and so we have Nick off to the side, and he is the more powerful one of the group, but I still think that the show worked better when they were all at one spot together, because it all feeds into the ridiculousness.
That's every show, though. Like, the best scenes in Friends is when all six of them are together. The best scene in The Flash is when they're all in Star Labs figuring stuff out together. Like, it's any show when you can get, like, they're all part of the main cast for a reason, because going to be prominent. You have a lot to do with them. They need every episode. If you have them, and they usually have chemistry with the other actors, you have them all together. Because I agree that, you know, when the Legends can have everybody on the Wave Rider at the same time, the show's at its best. Yep. And but yeah, that's every show. And but, you know, if you're telling stories, sometimes people, you know, you drift off and have to do different threads and tell different things and that kind of thing. So hopefully they can find a way. You know, listen, if they can find a way to fight a demon with a teddy bear, going to get, you know, 6-7 people back into the same room together for some reason. But, you know, there might be reasons behind the scenes that we don't know, that, you know, someone doesn't want to travel to all the places they have to go to do stuff or whatever. And so they just want to stay at the Time Bureau set or something like that. But yeah, it's all shows always work better when it's all the cast members together.
Yeah.
Yeah. Really what I'll, the only thing I really want from this show is an actual episode where they have to go find a hippie killer. I am referencing the season premiere live tweet Katie did.
I'm really good at live tweeting. Okay. Let's just be honest.
It's true. So we have covered the wide gamut of all things Arrowverse and CW. And is there anything else that we need to cover tonight?
I don't think we said it all. We didn't really talk about the 90s Flash and that kind of stuff, but we hit enough. Maybe we can do another roundup at the end of the year or something.
Yeah.
At the end of the season, I mean, the end of the Arrowverse year, not the end of this year. That's like tomorrow.
The end of the TV season.
Correct.
And so, in light of that, where can folks find everyone on social media?
You can find me on Revenge of the Fans, and on Twitter I'm at Chris Evans.
Do you carry a shield around with you?
Most of the time, yeah. I get weird looks, but
good deal.
I am KGilstrap13. That's KGilstrap with the number 13 on the end.
And you can follow me on Twitter at TheBellMan. That's BEALL, because my ancestors couldn't spell. And I'm also at Storybake on Instagram and other platforms. And also you can find more content from BAM Entertainment at wabamentertainment.com and on all social media platforms at WabamENT. We'll see y'all next time.
You've been listening to the WABAM Entertainment Podcast. For more from WABAM Entertainment, visit us on the web at wabamentertainment.com. You can let us know what you thought of this episode on Twitter, Facebook, or Instagram at WABAMENT. Thanks for listening. We'll see y'all next time.